What's going on in the present affects our future, our tomorrows. Did you know that RUC provides help in preparing the tomorrows for our children? We're excited to invite you to the 15th annual RUC fundraising banquet on April 9th, where we'll present The Tomorrow Show. Our banquet will be held at the Villa Milano, with festivities beginning at 5:30, dinner is at 6:30, and the program gets underway at 7. Make your reservations today at relationshipsunderconstruction.com.
When does life begin, and does it really matter? We'll discuss this next on Principles and Policies. Hello, this is Chuck Michaelis. I'm the host here on Principles and Policies. Today, this show was recorded for Saturday, February 24th, 2024. It's a special day in my particular life and some others of you out there. It's my 67th birthday today. Now, what does that mean? That means I'm getting ready to go over and apply for Social Security. I should have applied already so I could start collecting in March. But that didn't happen because why? Well, because I'm reluctant to do it, but I'm being forced into it. My business is changing. And that's happening all over the place. And I'm 67, and I'm pretty tech-savvy still. But I just didn't keep up with the changes in marketing and that kind of thing. So on my 67th birthday, I'm looking to go on Social Security, but that doesn't mean that's the end of my work career. I'm looking for a job. So, and the company will remain open for quite some time, I think. We're just not doing the same amount of business we were doing, and I need to find another job to supplement my Social Security. That being said, no boo-hoos. I want to wish Mike O'Reilly's wife, Kelly, a happy birthday, because her birthday is on the 23rd. So the day I'm recording this is Kelly's birthday. Happy birthday, Kelly. And what's interesting about today, too, this Friday the 23rd of February 2024, my middle daughter just got an announcement that she was being laid off from the company she's worked for now for 7 years. She's been working at home for a number of years. Why? Because, well, she has three children, and it was a great job for her. What she did was she worked... There are companies out there who, companies submit their bills and they're paid for by this third party that my daughter works for. Well, it was just announced, her company got bought out. It was a locally owned company. It was out of Columbus, Ohio. And, they got bought up, oh gosh, I don't know, three, four years ago, my estimation. And from a company out of New York City. And everybody predicted eventual disaster from that. And, you know, that happens in corporate America. Companies get bought up. They're great little companies. They're great to work with. They have fine staff, friendly people, very accommodating, very helpful. And they get... bigger companies come in and say, hey, look at that company. It's doing very well. It's a great profit. You know, this would be something that would be good to have in our portfolio. And they swoop in and they offer an amount of money that anybody who's, a stockholder looks at it and goes, wow, I'd really like to have a piece of that. This is very tempting. And we see that, and so these companies get bought up. Well, that's part of what's going on in my case. I've lost two manufacturers. One actually got bought up by a corporate giant, and they completely changed the way the company works. They completely changed the financial picture, you know, demanding huge down payments on product that we used to do 50% on, and now we have to do 100%. Well, we can't do that. It's a huge amounts of money. Because we got to be able to sell the product. You know, they want 100% down, and then they want you to wait 3 or 4 months for it to be delivered. Well, I can't do that. I'm a small business. So we've lost that manufacturer, and then we lost another manufacturer who basically is tired of fighting the giants, and she's almost at retirement age, and she has decided to close her plant, which was a major supplier of ours. So I've got one major supplier left, and I can't vet anybody else. It takes months to vet new suppliers. I don't have the time or the energy or the money to do that. So we're just winding down, trying to do a soft landing here. Am I still open? Yeah, you bet. Come to rainrocknutritionals.com. Take a look at what we have. And we would very much appreciate your business. We just did a major price markdown to make it easier for you to help us clear stock, just to put it bluntly. So I have a daughter who's laid off. I have another daughter who works for the same company. Now, my daughter who got laid off was part-time. My other daughter is full-time, and she's wondering if she's going to get it too. What's happening really with that company is what happens with a lot. I'm sure a lot of you have had this problem. They brought in if you're familiar with the term outsourcing, there was actually a very funny TV show called Outsourced, and it was based on a kind of a funny movie called Outsourced. What does that mean? Well, a man is hired to be a manager in a corporation, and he goes to the plant and it's empty, and he goes, "What's going on here?" And he goes, "Well, we've outsourced all this to a major outsourcing target. It's not China. It's a south of China." And so what he had to do was, this American guy had to go and manage this company in this other country. It was a fish out of water story. This American guy, some of the episodes were absolutely hilarious. But it was all about this company that had outsourced. Well, what's happened is that, these things that my daughter does, and my two daughters do online they brought in a quote unquote foreign third party. I think we've all had at least a glancing experience with this. So a foreign third party, and of course, when this happened, they were told, "Well, this isn't really, you're not going to be replaced by these people. They're just filling in gaps that we, okay, you're filling in gaps. Why don't you just hire more Americans? I mean, all these companies you're paying bills for are American corporations. So why are you outsourcing the work to it's just temporary, blah, blah, blah." And 2 weeks later, 2 or 3 weeks later, they get the notice that they're being laid off, you know, after this big email from the company, "We're not replacing you. We promise, blah, blah." Well, promises are useless. Action is what pays off. And so, for those who are in that boat, I sympathize and I empathize. When I started the company, Rain Rock Nutritionals, my brother and I started it. I was with his capital. I didn't have the capital. He did. And, we used that capital to start the company, and I ended up in control of it. And it wasn't big, you know, it wasn't big corporate maneuvering. It was just stuff that went on, and it was just seemed better. I had built the brand from nothing to usually growing sales. You know, we had downturns and that kind of thing, but nonetheless, the reason I was available to do that was I worked for a major corporation, an infant formula manufacturer, who hired me in 1996 and laid me off in 1997. Now, if I, you know, I'd just say maybe I was a bum and they wanted to get rid of me. Well, it was me and 325 other people. And what they told us when they laid us off was that we knew when we hired you that we were going to lay you off. Now, I can tell you that decision, I don't understand the workings of internal corporations. I'll be quite honest. I have a small corporation. I understand how it works from the inside out because I'm the only stockholder. But because they have these budgets and they're subsidiaries very often of a larger company, where I work, both companies I worked at were subsidiaries of much larger companies and they had a budget. Well, they didn't want to lose out on their budget by not hiring people, so they hired people. They hired me, they paid me a sign-on bonus, they moved me and stored my furniture while I looked for a house. All of this added up to, frankly, very large amounts of money. And I'm deeply grateful that they moved me from Michigan to Central Ohio. I grew up in Central Ohio. And I looked at an opportunity to work for this company as something that I just, frankly, I was deeply grateful. They were a good company. You'd know who they were right away, and you can probably tell. You can figure it out. The one I worked for before was a subsidiary of a large pharmaceutical company, and the one I worked for was a subsidiary of a large pharmaceutical company, and they've dropped the pretense and dropped the name of the company and just gone to the corporate name. So that kind of thing happens, folks. In the company I worked at in Michigan, a lot of our non-domestic, in other words, our foreign manufacturing for foreign countries was not done in America. Now, it was in one place, but in my plant, no, we didn't do that. That was wasn't outsourced. It was a company-owned plant in Europe, I think. And that was for Europe and Africa. But believe me, a lot of companies got in trouble for selling infant formula in Africa. And the reason they got in trouble was good. They were basically supplying free formula until women's ability to make milk for their infants dried up, and then they had to pay for it. Well, some of our competitors and ourselves got in trouble for that, and we should have gotten in trouble for that. That being said, and this is all besides the point of today, I've already gone through the first 13 or 14 minutes and I've talked about this. I want to talk today about life. I opened with when does life begin and does it really matter? We have this really weird debate going on about, it's based on the abortion argument. Life doesn't really begin. We just passed a constitutional amendment here in Ohio, and if you voted for this, shame on you. That basically says that up until the point of birth, a woman can elect to have her child killed. Now, some would say that goes too far. Well, abortion period goes too far. am I failing to acknowledge the fact that there are times when mother needs treatment for an illness and baby is terminated by the treatment? No, I don't deny that at all. Here is the rubric that is used to explain that. If the mother requires treatment and every effort is made to save both the mother and child, but the child is lost, that is not an abortion. If a woman miscarries and she has a DNC, that is not an abortion. This is the argument that was made to get this constitutional amendment passed, that somehow DNCs, dilation and curettage, it's a procedure for women who have miscarried or have lost a baby due to natural causes or have had an abortion, dilation and curettage, it's a procedure they go through. There was a claim that any law that would ban abortion would ban DNC procedures. That's nonsense. Dilation and curettage is a standard treatment for the loss of an infant. You have to take out the dead baby, and you have to take out the placenta. It has to be done. Sometimes women don't expel that naturally. Hence DNC. That doesn't answer the question. When does life begin? Now, the argument that prevailed in passage of that constitutional amendment here in Ohio was that life does not begin until the child's outside and takes its first breath. What's wrong with that argument? Well, almost everything. Because as we know, and we had a law in place in Ohio until that constitutional amendment, that basically said if the child could feel pain, then the child was sentient and alive and could not be aborted except under deeply extraordinary circumstances. And again, I would say that most of those circumstances have to do with the treatment for the preservation of the life of the mother, and which means it's not really an abortion at all. It's a treatment in which, unfortunately, the child dies. A woman might get cancer and have to have chemotherapy, and chemotherapy can kill an infant. Not always, but it can. Or radiation treatments, which can maim an infant to the point of death. That's not an abortion, folks. An ectopic pregnancy, depending on what type of ectopic pregnancy. If it's what we call a tubal pregnancy, where the egg is fertilized inside the tube and fails to descend into the uterus and implant. It implants instead in the tube. That can be fatal. That is virtually 100% fatal to the embryo, the baby. It is fatal. Babies can't survive that because there's no blood supply. There's not enough blood supply to set up shop. So generally, by the time a woman starts having symptoms that point to a tubal pregnancy, the baby is already dead. When they go in to reduce the tubal pregnancy and repair the damage, the baby's generally dead. And if it's not dead, it will be dead in a few hours to a few days, because that is not survivable. However, there is a type of, and this is where one of the problems with the language. Some ectopic pregnancies are outside the cervix, outside the uterus, and outside the tube, which means it's in the body cavity, that embryos can implant outside the body cavity, or outside the ovaries can expel the egg, and the egg can be fertilized, and instead of making its way down the tube, it can go back into the abdominal cavity. Well, guess what? Those can be, believe it or not, delivered full term or very close to full term. There was a OBGYN in Dresden who I knew. He's moved to South Carolina. but who I knew who specialized in that. He specialized in delivering the abdominal cavity ectopics, not tubals. He would tell you right up front, the tubals won't go. The baby will die. And sometimes if you don't take care of it, if you don't give treatment, the mother will die. That's why it becomes absolutely necessary to handle those as quickly as possible, because the mother can die from an ectopic. We live in a wonderful age, ladies and gentlemen. We live in a beautiful age where we have all this medical science that can find these things, that understands what's happening, that knows how to treat these things. And women rarely die from ectopic pregnancies anymore, unless they just don't discover them or they completely ignore the symptoms. And that can happen. I'm sure it does happen from time to time. But there are very few places where a pregnancy has to end. Again, treatment for the mother and or treatment for the baby, in which the baby dies. And remember, we are now able to do surgeries on infants to correct developmental anomalies while they're still in the womb. Is that not fantastic? Have you seen the picture of the little baby, the baby under development, and is being treated by a physician who is doing reparative work? The baby's little hand comes up and grabs the physician's tiny little hand comes up and grabs the surgeon's finger. It's out there. It's not published much. Why? Because that's not the narrative. That's not the narrative that the news media wants to present. Why? Because it's a wonderful argument against abortion. So we know that for some reason, this thing that we practice a form of schizophrenia in this country about the unborn. And I want to bring up a biblical passage. And this is important. It's Exodus 21, verse 22. And this is from the English Standard Version, the ESV. When men strive together and hit a pregnant woman so that her children come out, but there is no harm, the one who hit her shall surely be fined, as the woman's husband shall impose on him, and he shall pay as the judges determine. But if there is harm, then you shall pay life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. That's called the lex talionis, the law of tooth and claw, basically. But what it says, now, this is a controversial passage, because pro-abortion people, I'm not talking about pro-choice, there isn't such a thing as pro-choice. Pro-choice is a misnomer for those who want abortions to occur. If you're pro-choice, then you're okay with abortion, which means the murder of the unborn. Flat out. I allow no nuances in discussion. Pro-choice is pro-abortion. Okay, that being said. So, if you go back to 22, when men strive together and hit a pregnant woman so that her children come out. Now, why is it in plural? Well, obviously women can carry more than one infant, right? My mother-in-law is a twin. She's not an identical. She's a fraternal. She has a sister. And if you saw these two women when they were younger, dealt with their personalities, they're nothing alike at all. They're two completely different people. But they were twins. Okay. So, the argument from pro-abortionists is that, well, really what this means, that if the pregnant woman is hit and her children come outside of the house to see it, or there is no harm. The one who hit her shall surely be fined. Come outside the house, really? That is so beyond a stretch. So beyond the meaning of the words. This means that essentially a woman is struck to the point where it causes a premature birth. And that there is no harm. Babies can survive premature birth back to, even in these days, could survive back to several days. Or, I mean, several weeks. My own daughter just had a premature birth. They called it a preemie. She was at 36 and a half weeks. And by the calendar, she was 3.5 weeks early. Okay? And she had to give premature birth by induced labor because the child was, she and the child were both very toxic. Not preeclamptic, but she had gotten a urinary tract infection, and the baby felt the effects of that. She said, I'm very sick, I'm very dehydrated, and the baby has stopped moving. So they went right to labor and delivery and said, okay, so I'm 36 and a half weeks. They knew her case. They knew everything. They go, get in here. You're having a baby today. And she did. Okay. So when men strive together and hit a pregnant woman so that her children come out, I think there can be, if you want to argue that this means the children come outside, I guess, to witness this horrible thing going on. But there is no harm. Well, the whole point is that if children came out and saw their mother being hit and causing her, that would cause harm, right? I think we would all agree that that would cause harm. What kind of harm are they talking about? They're talking about the children coming out and survive just fine. The children are not really hurt. They're just early. The one who hit her shall surely be fined. Okay. Fined how? As the woman's husband shall impose on him, and he shall pay as the judges determine. So the husband has a right to recoup the loss of his wife's health as she recovers from giving birth early. Any treatment that she and the child might incur, physicians charged back then just like they do now. Doctors didn't go around doing free house calls. They did house calls, but they didn't do it for free. People need to be paid for their services. Okay, so there would be, and he would probably lose her services. When I say services, remember, men and women work together. She provided things in the house, in the home, and he would lose that for a time. There might be what they call a loss of consortium because she's damaged. That in itself has a value. Sometimes people, when they get divorced, and one or the other party, generally the man has, the woman has withdrawn sexually from the man because she's engaged in an affair. A man can sue another man for loss of consortium. In other words, the woman has provided sex to another man and not to the husband. That's called loss of consortium. Okay, so that has a value. And the judges shall, he'll ask for a fine, and who determines what the actual number is? The judges do. Okay, But if there is harm, and again, we're not talking about the little kids being traumatized by coming outside and seeing their mom. What harm are we talking about? Death or severe injury of the child, of the baby that is born from this problem. Remember, it's not just death, but it is a maiming of this child. Then you shall pay life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. That kind of lays it out. It basically says if you cause harm to the unborn, under this circumstance, it's a death penalty offense. If you maim a child, now remember, we have people that do presentations. If you've never seen one of these, they're powerful. People who have survived attempts to abort them. People who have scars. People who have lost limbs. People who have all kinds of issues because the butcher, the quack, who basically attempted these abortions, didn't do it right. Now, is it good that the child survived? Obviously. Even, you know, I would rather be, I'm an old man. I have scars. I have wounds. I have limps. I have pain. All due to the things that I've suffered traumatically. Look, all men pretty much do that. Look at anybody who's played professional sports. They're all gimping around. They're all absolutely, almost can't move. They all have artificial joints. Not all of them have artificial joints, but they have artificial joints. They have constant pain. They have head injuries that have left them with early senility or other, Parkinson's disease, other, you know, traumatic nerve damage and that kind of thing. These are facts. And what does that mean? That means these poor people who, through no fault of their own, they did nothing. Their parents engaged in activity that caused their conception. Now, I'm going to separate out a category here, kind of. Remember, yeah, the argument that will be made that it was rape or incest. Okay. Why would we apply the death penalty to one of the victims in a rape or an incest? In incest, we all know what that is. Why is the child liable for death because the parents engaged in an activity that was forbidden or even in many cases illegal? Is it traumatic to the mother? I'm absolutely positive that it is. Depending, I've known people who engaged in incestuous relationships who actually went to states where they could get married. Now, obviously not talking about a brother and sister, but cousins, first cousins. And that's an incestuous relationship. And the excuse that should be a loophole for those people to be able to get an abortion because they're cousins. Nope. No, because there's another human being involved. And that's what I'm getting at here. Okay, so rape and incest. Now, going back to it, the idea that children should be aborted and that a botched abortion, and listen, people have all kinds of reasons why they seek out an abortion. I have people in my family who sought out abortions, and when she always had large babies, very large babies, very large babies, not fat, just big. And I remember her telling me, this person I know, her telling me that she went to an abortion clinic. She was given money by the father, who was a real piece of work. But she was given money and she went to the abortion clinic and told her that it was going to cost her more money because she was further along than she said she was. Now, this woman had large babies, and she said, she told the woman at the clinic, she goes, "Oh no, you don't. I know the exact date when this took place. I know the exact date. You cannot do this to me." In other words, the abortion clinic, not surprisingly, considering what they do, you think an abortionist would hesitate to defraud a potential abortion customer? Don't kid yourself. They wanted significantly more money, and she said, "No, you can't do that." So the woman, well, I have to go talk to the clinic director. So she left the room, got up, and looked at the ultrasound that they had done, which they did not show her. I think in Ohio now you have to do that before you can abort. I don't think that law was abrogated by that awful amendment that we passed. But that being said, she got up, this woman got up and went to talk to the clinic director, and this woman looked at her ultrasound, and she said, "That was a baby. There's no doubt in my mind that was a baby." And she goes, "I didn't even wait for her to come back. I walked out." And she went and found a family who a good Christian family, who gave her a place to live while she was pregnant, fed and clothed her, and then she adopted that child out. Okay. Should she have engaged in that activity outside of marriage? No. Did she? Yes. Look, it's a sin. And is she forgiven for that sin? Absolutely. You know what else she didn't have to be forgiven for? For murdering her unborn child. And the fact is that she is blessed by the fact that she gave that child up for adoption. She knew who the family was. They were not friends of ours or anything, but she knew who the family was and got to vet who this child went to. She got to, pick the parents. That's a great thing. That's a wonderful thing. What's not a wonderful thing is when you go to abort your child and they can't even get it right. So they maim your child. That's what this is about. Should this woman who attempted to abort her child and instead ended up with a maimed child, should that person have been able to collect damages? Or should the child be able to collect damages? Well, of course. But the logic gets into a problematic area because now all of a sudden you're saying, "I'm suing you because you didn't get it right. You have to pay me damages because you didn't get it right. You didn't kill me. You just maimed me." That's a problem. This is one of those things as a society we'd have to work out. But the fact is, that's not an option. Why? Because our laws have walked away from the idea that human beings are human beings from the moment of conception. Now, am I saying that life begins at conception? Absolutely, I'm saying that. And I'm saying that both from the aspect of a Christian believer who believes what God has said. I want to point to a passage in Psalm 139. Many of you are familiar with this. This is a definitive passage for those of us who have belief. And it is, "For you created my innermost parts. You wove me together in my mother's womb." That's in the New American Standard. I use generally the ESV. "For you formed my inward parts. You knitted me together in my mother's womb." What does that say? In Jeremiah chapter 1, verse 5. "Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I sanctified you. I ordained you a prophet to the nations." Okay, he's talking specifically to Jeremiah, But the New Testament makes it rather clear that that's not the only person that's being spoken of here. Ephesians chapter 1, verses 4 and 5. Even as he chose us in him before the foundation of the world, that we should be holy and blameless before him, in love he predestined us for adoption to himself as sons through Jesus Christ, according to the purpose of his will. This means that we were chosen before the foundations of the world, not only to simply be created, but also what our spiritual journey will be. We can argue about that. I realize I may have offended some free will sensibilities, and that's fine. I suggest you do your own Bible study on that. But there are other passages. Romans 8:29. For those whom he foreknew, who did he foreknow? Well, according to Ephesians 1 and Jeremiah 1, he foreknew everybody. For those whom he foreknew, he also predestined to be conformed to the image of his son in order that he might be the firstborn among many brothers. Here's one about Christ himself. He was foreknown before the foundation of the world, but was made manifest in the last times for the sake of you. Why was he made manifest for the sake of you? Because he chose us before the foundation of the world. To continue that theme, Ephesians 1:11, this is just a few verses down from the earlier Ephesians. In him we have obtained an inheritance, having been predestined according to the purpose of him who works all things according to the counsel of his will. Here's another one from Psalm 139. Your eyes saw my unformed substance. In your book were written every one of them, the days that were formed for me, when as yet there was none of them. In other words, what we saw earlier in Psalm 139, we were knit together in our mother's womb from before we were. God knew us from before the beginnings, the foundations of the world. There are any number of these passages. The fact is that's not the only reason that I am a person who believes in the that life begins at conception. I've often argued against the idea that your gender is assigned you at birth. No, it's not. It's assigned to you at conception, and that's when your life begins. Let's talk about how life does begin when the seed from the male meets the seed from the female. Sperm meets egg. There is one half of a complete genome in there. There are all 23 chromosomes have one copy from sperm and one from egg. Your normal complement in your cells is two copies. There are exceptions to that. We won't get into that. Well, I did that several times in the past. But the fact is there's one copy in sperm and one copy in egg. And when those get together, suddenly you've got a complete pair. You have a unique human being. Remember that when that happens, it's called recombination. The chromosomes from the man and the chromosomes from the woman, they do a crossover. Hunks of genes from different chromosomes in the man cross over and to the woman, and the woman's are cut out and cross over to the man. That's why you get such unique individualism in development. Why I have three daughters who don't really look alike. Just like my wife's sisters, her three sisters, they don't really look alike. Some of them look like their parents, and the same thing with my children. My daughter Liz is very clearly a Michaelis. My daughter Stephanie looks exactly like my mother, except that she's shorter. My daughter Stephanie is several inches shorter than my mother. My mom was very tall, 5'11 or 6, I think she was 5'11 or 5'10. my middle daughter doesn't really look, she looks like this jumbled mix of Jenny and I and her grandparents and all kinds of things. And the same thing with Jenny's sisters. In my family, I look like the Michaelis side, and my brother and sister look like the Norton side, my mom's side of the family. So that happens, and the reason that happens is this recombination. It's unique. You are a unique human being from the moment of conception. Even when there are defects in... And there are. You can't get away from that. There are a certain number of defects. And there are a certain number of genes that are damaged. My brother and sister and I all have genes for type 2 diabetes. We have a genetic predisposition to type 2 diabetes and heart disease. Now, we've managed to keep all that away. I haven't kept... All of us still have type 2 diabetes, but we don't all have heart disease. Why? Because we realize this problem and we work to counter it with supplementation and exercise and that kind of thing. Okay, that being said, we are all individuals. We are all conceived of by God before the foundations of the world. This is why life begins at conception. Do all conceived babies survive? No, they don't. My wife and I had a miscarriage. Many of you have suffered miscarriages. Is it a blow? Yes, it is. It's a deep psychological blow, especially when you lose one very far along in the pregnancy. We lost, our miscarriage came really, really, really early, and it turns out it was probably a good thing. Because I had fertility issues, and my wife did not. They test her first because for a number of reasons. One thing is it's more expensive, and so they make more money. And the other thing is a lot of husbands are reluctant to think that they might have fertility issues. Well, it turns out it was me, and they were about to do some very expensive test on her, and I go, wait a minute. We went into the specialist, and I said, wait a minute. Nobody's tested me yet, and mine's easy. And I gave the sample, and they said, oh, guess what? You are the problem. So we fixed that. I had surgery to fix it, and voila, I have three daughters. So that being said, life begins at conception. You cannot argue anything else. Now, there are very sophisticated arguments. Those of you who bought into the lie that brought in the passage of the abortion amendment, sorry for you. What you did was you basically voted to murder completely viable individuals for personal convenience. And that's the bottom line. Now, you know, why am I bringing this up now? Well, it's important to understand why we argue in favor of this. It hasn't had a lot of effect because people have become so jaded to these ideas. There's a decision that's made the headlines. And a lot of you may not have really thought through it, and a lot of you may have not heard it. There is kind of an apoplexy on the pro-abortion side. And again, I'll restate, pro-choice is pro-abortion. The Alabama Supreme Court issued a ruling, I think it was last week, that frozen embryos are children. And the purpose of that was allowing two wrongful death suits against a Mobile, Alabama fertility clinic to proceed. My daughter lives in Mobile, so the decision could have sweeping implications for people seeking in vitro fertilization or other assisted reproductive technology treatments and could increase criminalization of expectant people. I don't know how that would be the case. It's that is an openly silly argument, except I can see where you might argue that an infant that these embryos that have now been ruled by the Alabama Supreme Court, and by the way, that will get a federal hearing, and I'm hoping it gets before the Supreme Court. And if it does, I predict that they will rule incorrectly on it. Why? Because it's such a political hot potato. There are already supposedly conservative members of the Supreme Court who are feeling the heat over overturning Roe v. Wade, which was awful decision. If you've ever read it, it's simply horrid. It basically says, we don't really know when life begins, but until we figure that out, we're going to err on the side of killing, allowing them to be killed. Okay, what happened was, in this case, a patient at Mobile Center for Reproductive Medicine wandered into the clinic's cryogenic storage unit and removed several embryos. They wandered into a cryogenic storage unit. Let me tell you something. It's cold in there. I mean, it's not like your freezer, you know, set at zero. It is way cold in there. So somebody wandered in and removed several embryos and then got burned because when they touched the container, it's so cold that it burned their hands. And they were dropped. And that caused the patient to drop the embryos on the floor, quote-unquote, killing them. Well, yes, it did kill them. Now, what pro-abortionists would have to argue is that, no, it didn't kill them. It destroyed potential life. No, these were fertilized embryos. In other words, they were human beings frozen in their developmental state at a certain stage. Okay? So these are not fully formed human beings, but human beings nonetheless. And they are alive, despite being frozen. Now, there were three couples who lost frozen embryos, and they sued for wrongful death. There was, the clinic claimed that Alabama's wrongful death of a minor act did not apply to embryos outside of the womb. Mobile County Circuit Court Judge Jill Parrish Phillips agreed with the argument and ruled to dismiss the case. But the state Supreme Court threw that decision out last week. Alabama Supreme Court Justice J. Mitchell wrote that embryos are indeed protected under the state's existing law. The central question presented in these consolidated appeals, which involve the death of embryos kept in a cryogenic nursery, is whether the act contains an unwritten exception to that rule for extrauterine children, that is, unborn children who are located outside of the biological uterus at the time they are killed. He wrote, under existing black letter law, the answer to that question is no. What he means is black letter law is not a law issued by a court, but a law issued by a legislature. So the legislature has determined that those embryos are protected by a law. All right. That is, unborn children who are located, under existing black letter law, the answer to that question is no. The wrongful death of a minor act applies to all unborn children, regardless of their location. Okay, here's where the rub is. Here's where the big fight is. Here's why the pro-abort left and the news media are so up in arms over this. Because that acknowledges that life begins not at birth, but at conception. It also affirms to those who are willing to compromise, it's not when the embryo feels pain, it's not when there's a heartbeat, it's not when there's some other test of sentience or development. It's at conception. This is why they've got to fight this tooth and toenail, because life beginning at conception completely eviscerates all the arguments in favor of abortion. I want to read to you some things in the U.S. Constitution. Now, does this carry the same weight as Scripture? We've already gone over that. No, absolutely not. But There are things in the U.S. Constitution that make it clear that protection of life, and I don't mean death penalty things and that kind of thing. That's an entirely different argument. It's completely separate. Don't give me this stuff that these are somehow morally equivalent. They are not. All right. Article 4. This is the Fourth Amendment. I'm not going to read the whole thing. Nor shall any person be subject for the same offense to be put twice in jeopardy of life or limb. Nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against, blah, blah, blah. Okay, there's the protection of life. This is the 14th Amendment. All persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. No state, this is important, shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Do abortion laws remove life, the right to life, without due process of law? They would say no. They'd say no. We have legislated this away, this right to life away. You cannot legislate the right to life away. It's guaranteed by God, and it should be guaranteed by law. And strictly speaking, from what I've read to you, it is restricted by law. But the only way you can get away with these things is by convincing people that an embryo, a developing human being, is not a human being. It's not live. It's simply, what's the common phrase? It's a glob of cells. It's simply a blob of cells. No, it is not. It's a human being who's growing into a human being, can be nothing else. You cannot arrest development at a certain place, and if ontology recapitulated phylogeny, which we talked about, you'd be able to arrest development, and voila, you've got a fish or a lizard or whatever. The fact is, you can't do that. And what Alabama has done is really upset the apple cart. I mean, like, really, 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 really upset the apple cart. And made people, hopefully, they will think, people will think about what has been done by this ruling. And what I want to impart to you is that you must think, and if you must inculcate into your thinking that human beings are human beings from the moment of conception in our physical bodies, but we're made by God from before the foundations of the world. So you've got a mix of the scientific and the spiritual. I know we're not supposed to do that, but I do it all the time. And hopefully you will too. That's an important takeaway from this. The other important takeaway is that this fight is nowhere near over. Which side of this fight are you going to come down on? This is a place where the church should be involved in politics. I personally think that the church should be involved in politics on a lot of issues. But this is the one where the rubber meets the road, where the intersection is right there and the vehicles are crashing. The church needs to be involved in this fight. Now, what can we fight? Frankly, these questions of life, first, we need to rescind things like that awful amendment we passed in November. And you should be thinking in those terms if you're approached. Engage in the abortion debate in a real way. I will be talking about this in future shows. Well, you know what I think. I want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And join me again next week for another Principles and Policies.
What's going on in the present affects our future, our tomorrows. Did you know that RUC provides help in preparing the tomorrows for our children? We're excited to invite you to the 15th annual RUC fundraising banquet on April 9th, where we'll present The Tomorrow Show. Our banquet will be held at the Villa Milano, with festivities beginning at 5:30, dinner is at 6:30, and the program gets underway at 7. Make your reservations today at relationshipsunderconstruction.com.